If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of the Mad Men and talk about it. So excited for you to join us for another wonderful episode of the Mad Men podcast about men who are mad working at jobs. If you like the way we work at our jobs, which is this, go to patreon.com/frogcast. And why don't you join up, and not only do you get a bonus episode every week, but you get this episode a week early before everyone else does. What a deal.
What a deal.
What a steal.
You can't afford not to do it.
Yes. If you don't do it, then you will go bankrupt or something. Give us 5 stars in a review on all of the podcast apps. You know, some people have been, complaining about how we take so long between seasons, to which I say to them,
sorry, mom.
Yeah, sorry, mom. You're not my mom, you stupid bitches. I'll do this as fast as or as slow as I want. But I do really appreciate you guys tuning in for another wonderful season of the show. And When I call you stupid bitches, you know that I love you.
It's out of love. It's out of respect. It's out of
love. That's right.
Breaking balls.
We're just breaking balls, dude.
Breaking barriers, breaking balls.
Breaking bad. I don't know if we'll ever do that show. Today's episode is The Summer Man from Season 4 of Mad Men, Episode 8, and we have a wonderful guest. This is a first-time guest. A first-time long time, as no one says. He is a comedian, and he is the host of the wonderful podcast, I Hate Bill Maher. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome to the podcast, Will Weldon.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great. You know, most podcasts you do, they put all the plugs and the, hey, sign up for the Patreon. They put that at the end.
That's
but I
right.
appreciate the way you guys put it at the top. You make me sit here in silence. Yeah. You make the guests sort of sit there twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah, absolutely. We're trying to innovate in making our guests.
I feel like we invented it, though, because there was a time where, at the end of the episode, everyone's like, Ben, please do follow and subscribe. And I was like, yo, what if, like, right at the beginning, you're just like, hi everyone, help. You know,
I need some money,
help. Not just any money. That's not the song. That's not the Draper D story for today, though I did think about that. Will Weldon, thank you for coming on. This is a podcast about Mad Men, but I want to ask you, What's your favorite advertisement?
So my favorite advertisement is one for the mobile game Royal Kingdom. And the reason the reason I love this ad so much is because the ad is Kevin Hart. He is doing stand-up comedy. He's on a stand-up comedy set. So it's like a brick wall behind him or something. Mm. And he's doing stand-up. And somebody in the crowd is on their phone. And he goes, "Hey, excuse me. Are you on your phone while I'm doing stand-up?" And the guy's like, "Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm just playing Royal Kingdom on my phone." And Kevin Hart goes, "Oh, really? Me too." And he pulls out his phone. And the reason I love that ad is that people like to make fun of Kevin Hart for having, like, no principles.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
He will shill for anything. And it has gotten so bad that someone came to him and was like, "Here's our pitch for the ad. Your stand-up comedy is so boring and bad that not only is the audience on their phone during it, you're also on your phone during it." And he went, "Sounds great. When does the check clear?"
Yeah, whatever. Give me money. Well, okay, so I think I found that ad. Here it is right here. This is for Royal Kingdom.
"So I told the girl, I said, well, do me a favor. Put the money in the bag." Yeah.
That's funny because that's what he told probably the people who made this advertisement. He said, "Whatever, give
this
money."
Guy's balls were so big.
"Excuse me, you on your phone?"
"Yeah, oh man, I'm playing this game Royal Kingdom. Love this game."
"You're playing Royal Kingdom?"
"Yeah."
"At my show?"
"I'm so sorry."
"Well, you do not have to apologize." Oof. Like, I love this game.
He brought out his phone.
"I play Royal Kingdom, and let's be clear, I'm playing the game uninterrupted, people." That's right. No ads talking about "buy this now."
"I hate ads, bro. I hate them."
"Tell you what else you hate, chewing your food, sir." Okay?
Dude, this is pathetic in ways I didn't know were possible. There is some, you know what the
I do like the idea of putting like the Def Jam audience in there. Like, "Oh shit, he's playing Royal Kingdom."
Yeah, just like if this were at the Apollo, it would be much funnier. Just there's a giant, what is that? The cane that pulls people off stage.
Yeah, the hook. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been.
Yeah, or
great.
The clown with a broom. Yeah, oh, people in the crowd just shouting at him like, "Yo, this guy's got no principles."
Booing him off stage because he's doing a fucking ad for like scrubbing bubbles. Just in the middle of the act doing a product placement is really funny. You know, so this is the first time we've ever had
all
anyone.
Right, Kev, we got this ad concept for you. It's about how you really love getting interrupted while you're trying to eat dinner with your family. Hell yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I don't care. Even if it ruins his life, he would still do it. Yeah. This is the first time we've ever had, I think, anyone bring up a mobile game ad, which is kind of incredible because that's a whole other world of advertisements.
Mm. Yeah, the lying mobile game ad, dude. To the point where it became such a thing that then they started advertising other mobile games by going, "It's not a lie. That's the actual game."
Yeah,
is
right.
What they used to lie that the game was like. And you're like, okay, well, that game always looked boring. Like, it's just simple math is what those
games
were.
Dude, those games were crazy. It would just be like, this fish has to eat a fish of bigger number in order to eat the biggest fish, who's like got a big number. And I remember going like, that sounds like a stupid game. Why would anyone play that? I'm going to download it though. And then you try to play that game and it's like, nah, this is, you just kind of got to match the squares. And I was like, well, why'd you show me the fish then?
Dude. And then it moved on to, it was in the early
days,
it was just like
fish.
Very good. That's good though.
Sorry.
Well, that's the traditional, that is the traditional order of fishing, in fact.
That's true.
That's true, actually.
Yeah.
A good point.
I guess cast should be in there. That's a classic bait, cast, and fish is what that is.
We reverse engineered the act of fishing on accident.
Dude, but my actual favorite mobile ads are the ones that are like, they're animated, and it's like a girl and her husband, and she has, it'll be like stink lines in her armpits, and the husband leaves her, and then her and her baby have to live in an old home that in the winter. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Is that the one you're like tapping, it's like tapping options? Like, it's
it's like
she leaves and then it's like, help her or abandon her. And it's like, help her. And you move her into a cabin. I remember those ones.
I love those because those are just the most insane storyline you could even consider. And you just kind of go with it, waiting for that X. But you're like,
well, now they're just the ads. Now they're just the ads on YouTube that are just AI and are just like, the man was walking through the park when the woman fell through from the sky and her angel wings were caught on a tree and were pulled off. And then the man helped her and he took her to a bar where they served her drinks. It's just like generating the next line.
Dude, that could like lead. With you, I was enthralled by where that was going.
I watched one of those for, I swear to God, 4 straight minutes before I was like, oh no.
What are they selling? I never know. I'm just like, I think there's a game. It says skip. I can skip now, but I don't want to skip. I want to know why are we doing this?
I think the thing it seems to most effectively be advertising is for the viewer to end their own life. Because if you spend like 5 minutes watching something like that, it's like, well, what's the point of carrying on?
That's right. That's right. It's a way of letting the viewer know that like you have time to kill. And you're therefore nothing. You're nothing.
You're nothing.
And you don't deserve to live. But this isn't a podcast about how sometimes the consumer of content does not deserve to live. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, once again, we're talking about from season 4 of Mad Men, episode 8, The Summer Man. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Don attempts to regain control over his life through physical changes and journal writing. Betty forbids him from attending Eugene's birthday party and is flustered when she and Henry run into Don and Bethany on a date. Don's persistence with Faye results in an impromptu dinner date. Joey's sexism creates friction with Joan, forcing Peggy to take action.
That's right. But more importantly,
that's stuff that happened.
Those are the things that happen in the episode. But I think more importantly, what is happening at the time this episode is set in?
That's right. We cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We like to put some of that context back in with a little segment that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's news. That's right. We're going all the way back to September 12th, 2010, when this episode aired. And that means the news machine is going all the way back to September 12th, 1965, the year that the show is set in.
That's right.
That's right. I'm taking you to the Beaumont, Texas Enterprise for this story.
That's the name of a newspaper?
That's right. In Beaumont, Texas.
Beaumont, Texas Enterprise.
That's right.
Back when a city like Beaumont had like 6 newspapers?
Right. Yeah. This is back when print news was still something that people had. So much so that there were
Give me a picture of that cow.
Yeah. I mean, Chronicles I've seen, Times, of course. I've never heard of an enterprise.
Well, you have now.
I have now.
Headline, Mother Misled, Son 17 is Sent to War Zone.
Oh, shit. They misled the mother?
Yeah. A U.S. Marine Corps recruiter admitted Saturday he led at least one mother to believe her 17-year-old son would not be sent into combat until he became 18. The Marines...
Well, damn. What?
The Marines promptly cleared up what they called a misunderstanding. The mother indicated approval, and the Marines promised it wouldn't happen again.
Sergeant well, Richard, it can't happen again.
Yeah, because he's dead.
That's not how age works.
Not how time works, yeah.
It's so crazy. Sorry about that. Never again. We'll never send him in when he's 17 again.
Representative John Conyers called the meeting at the request of Mrs. Blanche N. Hubert of Detroit. She claimed her son Carl, now a bazooka loader in Vietnam.
Hell yeah, good job. If you're going to do something... In the army, bazooka loading seems like a pretty sick thing to do.
Wait, did you say John Conyers?
That's right. Yeah, he's very old.
He retired from Congress not even a decade ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It can't be the same guy.
He was on Nixon's enemies list. He was like a civil rights hero who ended up getting dementia and like sexually harassing his staff and like leaving Congress in disgrace.
In what order?
I think dementia
and then harassing his
staff. Yeah, he was on Nixon's list after Nixon died. It was like one of Nixon's grandchildren who put him on there.
I feel like dementia doesn't excuse the sexual harassment, but it's like, well, what are you going to do? It was like when George H.W. Bush was like squeezing asses. It was just like, you listen, he's got dementia. He's in a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair.
And he's done so much worse.
You can just like stand 4 feet away. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And don't dress like that.
Sorry, Will.
Mad Yourself a Man comes out in favor of Crypt Keeper sexual harassment. Okay.
Sorry, we've been stuck in watching a show about the 60s. So now we feel like we're men's men's now. We're men's men's.
Carl, now a bazooka loader in Vietnam, was misled into believing he would not be sent into combat until he reached his 18th birthday. I thought I was just going to be loading
bazookas for fun. You know, t-shirt cannon type stuff.
Man, if I wanted someone to take bazooka loads, I'd call Matt's mom.
Fuck you. God damn it.
Mrs. Hubert signed a waiver to allow her son to join the Marines last February. She described Carl as, quote, a dedicated Marine.
Well, he loves loading that bazooka. His favorite. He's been practicing since he was a kid.
Yeah.
Any update on whether Carl lived?
I looked for him. He was not listed as one of the Vietnam War casualties. So I believe he did live through the war. So good for him.
You.
Yeah.
It's also funny to be like breaking news story. Army recruiter lies to recruit.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I can't believe it. the United States Army? Never.
I guess military.
Yeah. Next, we have one of my favorite News Machine segments, which is Describe a Pretty Lady, which was a popular genre of article in
the 60s. God,
the
60s were so cool.
Yeah.
You could just have a whole newspaper that was like, I saw a new pretty lady today.
Also from the Beaumont Enterprise, shapely Kansas beauty, prospective pediatrician is Miss America of 1966.
Hell yeah.
Deborah Bryant, 19, a brown-haired beauty from Kansas, was named Miss America of 1966 Saturday night.
Hell yeah. What's her name?
Deborah Bryant. She does look like quite a dish.
No gooning during the podcast.
I'm
gonna goon.
I'm doing old-timey goons.
I leave my office in like 3 hours, and my wife's like, why did it take so long? And it's like, to have a crazy edging session in the middle of the podcast.
Oh, she is hot, though.
Miss Bryant, a 5'7" Christian college beauty who will enter Kansas University as a junior this fall, won a swimsuit preliminary in the pageant. She weighs 115 pounds and measures...
Thank you for telling me how much she weighs. I always feel like that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And measures 36, 23, 36.
Oh, what a winning hand! You know the song Brick House?
Mm-hmm. Deborah, who wants to become a pediatrician because of her love for children, hopes to enter Kansas University Medical School after graduation. I mean, let's try to finish college before we get on to med school.
Let's start there. Maybe your love of children will derail that a little bit, don't you think? You know? Because you're going to get knocked up. Will, do you like podcasts that are about misogyny and misogynistic at the same time?
I think, you know, as a guy whose podcast is entirely about Bill Maher, it's certainly something I have to wrestle let happen. A thing that comes up a lot is he'll do some racist joke, and I'll be like, that's not the racist joke. This is the racist joke.
Yeah, that is a recurring theme on that podcast, which is just like, he's not even doing the good version of this racist joke.
Yeah, and then, so I have all this like bigotry swirling around in my head all the time now, because I'm
crocodile
like,
crocodile Dundee of racism.
Yeah.
That's right. That's not a racist joke. Yeah.
That's not a Japanese stereotype. Yeah, this is a Japanese stereotype. Yeah. And then I slam a big camera down on the table.
That's not a Cholo accent. This. Keep going.
This is.
We're going over to...
I almost passed out.
Yeah. We're going... That's my cousin Sleeper. we're going over to the San Francisco Chronicle for this one. This is my other favorite genre, is articles about gangsters that seem to be written in a sort of gangster patois. Gangland crony slain in Chicago. Mandel Manny Scar, a dapper little gangster's crony who dreamed of building a little Las Vegas on Chicago's outskirts, was shot and killed in a professional gangland-style hit yesterday outside his Lakeshore Drive apartment. Damn. Scar, 41, was nailed with four 38-caliber bullets as he carried a bag loaded with delicatessen salami from his 1965 black convertible.
Nailed him!
Damn. Now he's never going to eat that salami. Oh, no.
Oh, no. You're going to have to eat it up off the floor.
The modern version of that would be like he got his ass nailed by four bullets, or he got his ass wrecked by four bullets would yeah, be the right. modern way of writing in that style.
Yeah.
Scar was under indictment on charges of evading $417,000 in income taxes. Charles Siragusa.
To be clear, is his name Scar as an S-K-A-R?
Yep,
or is,
S-K-A-R, okay, yeah.
It's not like Scarface.
No.
Charles, so he's, I love this. Just real quick, I love it when you find out a little gangster guy is one of the rare Jewish gangsters. That's my favorite thing ever.
You're like the psychiatrist from The Sopranos?
Those were some tough Jews. That is how I feel. I'm like, oh, Mother Inc.
Charles Siragusa, executive director of the Illinois Crime Investigating Committee, said Manny was hit because the outfit believed he was stooling to federal investigators or would do so when his trial opened October 11th.
Oh, damn. Wait, he was a rat?
They thought he might become a rat because he was being indicted. Police
also That's anti-Semitism. I see this as a problem with the mafia.
Oh, comparing a Jewish man to a rat. Wow, anti-Semitic trope.
I think I've heard this trope before.
So much for the tolerant left. Yeah. Police also speculated that Scar, a high-rolling gambler and wheeler dealer whose operation spread through Las Vegas and Los Angeles, might have defaulted on a debt or double-crossed an underworld boss. Mm. Although Scar never made the front ranks of the crime syndicate, he was believed to be its loyal frontman in real estate and other promotions, and he was the buddy of such reputed lords of the outfit as Sam Giancana and Marshall Caifano. A three-time loser, Scar's career hit its high point in 1962 when he opened a lavish establishment called Manny Scar's Sahara Inn near O'Hare International Airport.
This is the meanest fucking eulogy. Right? Like, this is like this. Why? Well, it's written half as a news story, half as like obituary roast.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Scar hoped to operate the inn with glitter of a Las Vegas gambling casino, and the opening night crowd included Hollywood celebrities Zsa Zsa Gabor, George Jessel, and Martha Ray. But Scar lost the Sahara the next year to creditors after one of his entertainers, singer Bobby Darin, was roughed up by hoodlums and police staged a narcotics raid at the inn.
Damn.
Ex-Cowboy star Gene Autry took over, but bowed out after the inn was bombed twice.
Well, that'll happen.
Yeah.
I love opening up your own Vegas. That reminds me of years ago outside the Improv. I met this woman who was staying at a hostel, and she was like, "My plan is I'm going to open up the biggest management company that'll manage everybody: comedians, artists, painters." And her describing that to me, I bet that's how it felt when some guy was going to be like, "Hey, I'm going to open up the next Las Vegas outside of Chicago," and right. just be like, "Yeah, sure, man, sure, you are. You're going to open up a little Vegas outside Chicago.
Have fun with that." Yeah, there is. I think it's been a while since someone has given me their manic future plans. But yeah. I miss when that was like a regular occurrence. Like, there was a time, maybe it was because I used to hang out with mostly comics at open mics, but the plans these men had, my God. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna make a tour, and I'm gonna tour every single beach in the United States. I'm only gonna do beach shows, and it's gonna be all day hanging out with beach babes all night, telling jokes. And I was like, yeah, man, you'll do that.
Boy, Americans used to dream. They used to dream of a better future. That's and now right. we have no hope, no jobs, and no cash.
Oh, you know? Yeah,
let's
exactly.
hope nothing happens to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, do you know any beach booking agents?
Yeah. Just messaging people who are at the beach with their family. Hey, who books that?
How did you get that?
Hey, who books a nice life? I'd love to get up on that sometime.
The entirety of my crowd work, by the way, has turned into that. I just say, hey, what do you do? And they go, how do you get that kind of job?
Is it a lengthy apprenticeship program?
Do you have to go to school for a thing like that? How do they check that you actually got the degree? So there's no real way to know.
They wouldn't know.
And then I just move on to the next audience member trying to get their life. Anyways. Is that it?
You guys feel properly contextualized?
I feel pretty contextualized. Now that I know what was happening in the 60s, I feel like we can finally start talking about what was happening in this episode. But first, here's a little bit of this week's Draper D story.
Yes.
Instead of Ticket to Ride, it's I don't even remember what I wrote. I had to do this one fast because I'm going to the Great Wolf Lodge in a few hours. So
I thought you went last week.
No, we had to cancel. So now I'm going to the Great Wolf Lodge today to do some indoor fucking water slides. Anyways, here's a song. I just want to point out that that first lyric is, I think men gonna be mad.
And what was the second part?
It's episode 8.
Okay,
I just want to just say,
I'm caught up.
I just really like that lyric, and I've been laughing about that for a while. Draper is a summer man, oh, so he never eats. Yeah. He's got a drink, bless you guys. He's got a drink, bless you guys. That's right. He's got a drink, bless you guys, or he'll be dead. Anyways, there's more to that song. Why? Because you want it, you idiots. So you can listen to that full stupid song at the end of the episode. But for now, let's talk about this one. Vince, general thoughts this episode. Summer Man?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Where did you say you were going in a few hours?
I'm going to Great Wolf Lodge.
Okay, I'm going to confess something that's embarrassing. You said Great Wolf Lodge, and in my head, for some reason, that was the same. That was I thought you meant Bohemian Grove, and I assumed you were joking, and so I was about to start laughing, and then when it was treated seriously, I was like, wait, what am I thinking of instead? And I Googled Satanic Grove, and that's when I was like, okay, right. Okay, that's...
No, I'm not going to Bohemian Grove. This is not Austin in the fucking 90s. Is that where it was, or is that just where Alex Jones was?
It's in Monterio, California. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to
That's important
that
to ask that question in case anyone else thought I was going to Bohemian Grove.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, thank God. He's not using whatever. He's not, scaring children to death and then drinking the fluid that comes out of them.
No, he is instead going to a indoor water park that basically does the same thing, except you're not allowed to eat and kill the children. Vince, what are your general thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I like following up on the episode in which Dawn finally opens up. Mad Men immediately gives us this alternate universe Dawn who's so introspective that he now gets to have a voiceover. It almost feels like a prank to me, like engineered by Don Draper himself. Like, is this what you wanted? To hear my innermost thoughts, you fucking idiot?
Yeah.
You happy now? I think this episode is a bit of a troll, but it's a good troll. It also feels like we maybe reached the limit of the original Mad Men pitch, the mysterious guy with a fake identity making his way through the advertising industry. We did that. The latter half of the 60s are here, and now the show has to do something different. I haven't rewatched past this point in my second watch of the show, but I get the sense that the voiceover is the way a way of like telegraphing a transition in the Mad Men in the scope of the Mad Men universe.
Okay. I like that. Will Weldon, what did you think of this episode and Mad Men in general?
Yeah, I will say I have not watched Mad Men. I remember...
Wait, all the way through or at all?
No, I've seen some episodes. My wife really likes it. She's watched it a couple times.
Sorry.
Yep, Bruno. And... I remember watching the pilots of Mad Men and Breaking Bad when they aired and sitting there in my apartment in Toronto and going, well, these aren't going to go. I was like, boring.
Yeah.
I was like, one of these is boring. The other one is stupid. Yeah. And
wait, which was which?
So Breaking Bad was stupid and Mad Men was boring.
Okay. Yeah.
The show, it's like... I, for some reason, though, have seen this episode, I swear to God, like 5 times. Like, the second it started, I was like, oh, my God, I got the fucking journaling episode.
That's great.
I love the way Don Draper goes through the classic journaling journey where the first time he writes in it, he goes, I don't know what I'm doing. Why am I writing this? This is embarrassing. And then by the end, he's sitting there clearly going like, well, what would Don Draper write in a situation like that? Like I was watching it with Borat, and she looked over at me and she was like, it's like funny how he is like such a pretentious ass. Like his diary, he has begun writing it for someone else.
Yeah.
The way we all like, well, but surely my journal will be published someday. And I'd like it to be more interesting than just, I had a pizza bagel for lunch today.
Yeah.
Yes. The second he learns to be introspective and vulnerable, he immediately turns insufferable.
It's
like, boom.
Yeah. I also remember people hating this episode. Like like Vince said, where it feels like a bit of a troll. I remember people being like, oh, what are we going to have narration on every episode? Is this going to be like a thing?
Yeah.
Like people seemed like genuinely irritated by this episode.
I have that exact memory as well. It was... this show is almost like a victim of its time a little bit, because it was like right at the beginning of people blogging about TV and getting insane with it. And it was such a popular show that like we've talked, you know, before about how they did like there was a Googling frenzy from some offhanded reference a few episodes ago where everyone was like, what did they mean? Who's Dr. Lyle Evans? And it was just a setup for a joke that was going to pay off like 2 episodes later. But like people, with this episode, I remember the same thing. People just being like, I don't know what the show thinks it's doing with the narration, but they shouldn't have that. And I just wanted to yell, like rewatching it, I wanted to yell at, you know, that version of the TV blogosphere and just be like, hey, can you guys shut the fuck up and watch the show? There's like if you're actually paying attention to the narration, you realize fairly quickly that it's sort of a joke about how Don Draper is going to how he thinks he should sound in writing a journal. Like that's very fucking funny. Like people were acting like it was sincerely poetic, but I was like, it's not sincere. No,
it's Sterling's Gold part two.
Exactly. That's exactly like, here's just like one of the bits of narration.
I looked up at the Barbizon and I thought of all the women in there, one in every room, touching themselves to sleep.
Like he wrote that down as if it was as if future generations would be like, damn, this guy really fucked, huh? Like it's so just like funny.
The literary sheen on, I bet there's a bunch of hot babes in there masturbating.
Yeah,
right
playing
now
with their pussies. Yeah. But he's like, no, I gotta make that sound like fucking like, smart.
Like Hemingway wrote it.
Yes. I really like this episode, in that, like, this is a, we're taking the piss out of Dawn episode, whether or not, you know, people believed that at the time watching it. I think it's pretty clear that, and I also relate to it on the level of, being an addict in recovery. So you're watching the way in which you try to replace alcohol with like art. This is something I related to very deeply, because like I remember when I was trying to get clean the first time, I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna write a new song every freaking day. And and so like for a month I wrote like 30 of the worst songs you've ever heard, and then eventually went back to doing heroin. And and it was like, it was watching him do that. It's this like It's, yeah, to me, it's a joke about a longer
struggling... have to think about getting drugs, must stare at navel.
Yes, yes, exactly. So I really loved watching him like trying to function as a normal person while just looking at the clock, like, when can I drink again? Looking at Peggy drinking, you know, her liquor and just being like, ugh, you know, just not really being able to live in any moment because he's like so desperately wants to drink again. And then when he does get the drink, you know, trying to drink like a gentleman, like having exactly one beer as he journals. it's really fun to watch. I love the Joey and Joan storyline, I think is really fun to watch because we talked about how Stan was a misogynist in previous episodes. And I was like, damn, that's kind of crazy how he's like that so much of a misogynist. In this one, Joey is just a piece of shit.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like, other than like before he gets like, you know, extremely misogynist, mm-hmm. like there's parts of me where I'm like, I feel like I've been the Joey when I was working in the corporate world.
Sure.
Where I'm like, I'm not getting paid enough to care about the shit that these other people care about. And like, I'm not going to like invest more of myself in this than this job has invested in me kind of mm-hmm. thing. And then he turned into Mel Gibson and I was like, okay, well he's worse than me. So that's
Well, I've never been that bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about this episode scene by scene. Let's go into it. I mean, when we start, we've got Don, of course, narrating the episode, trying to quit drinking, and he's lamenting about like being lazy. He's just like, I used to be so lazy. I wonder what would have happened if in high school I had stopped being so fucking lazy. And all I can think of is, I don't know, you still would have gone to Korea and killed a guy.
Yeah.
He's at a swim club. He's trying to get in shape. Throughout this episode, he's narrating while he's swimming. There's a nice little like Don getting healthy arc visually where you see him like first struggling with the swimming and then at the end he's like keeping up with the other people and it's like, oh, that's nice, good for him, now he's hot and in shape. Then a good portion of
you sound resentful, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it is,
oh, good for him, he's hot and in shape.
I don't think it's fair, okay? I think that what I like about Don Draper is that he looks hot on the outside but on the inside he's dying. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to be healthy.
I do appreciate, like, I feel like watching him swim confirms my take on the last episode, which was that him pretending not to be able to box at all was a artistic choice. Because you watch John Hamm swim in this, and like he can actually swim, like he has decent swimming form, which is like very not true of a lot of actors in swimming scenes.
Sure.
That I've seen in movies and television. I'm like, okay, this guy's clearly has swum before. So it confirmed my suspicion that that I think him doing like a weird shadow box where he looked like he didn't know what he was doing was more of an artistic choice.
Right.
Than John Hamm's lack of athleticism.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he is an athletic guy. You know.
Is shoving a broom handle up a guy's ass, is that athletic? Because then we know he's an athletic guy. Is torturing a pledge athletic? Because then
did he do that? Is that a thing he did?
He got kicked out of college for hazing.
Yeah, horrific hazing.
He shoved the broom handle up someone's ass?
Yeah.
Did they lube it?
Did they what?
Lube it.
Oh, I don't think so, no.
Oh, my God.
That sounds a little... So
isn't that attempted murder?
I mean, it's definitely assault. Yeah, I think it was like they dropped charges in exchange for them all leaving the university or something like that.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Well, John Hamm, it looks like you...
I can't believe it took four seasons and 8 episodes for this to come up.
Bro, we don't even know the names of the actors in the show.
No, I remember this story. I think he was a... Sigma Nu at University of Texas, and I was thinking, man, you had to haze pretty fucking hard to get kicked out of University of Texas in the 90s.
Yeah, that is wild. Yeah.
I worked with a guy one time who played football at the University of Las Vegas, and he was like, we had to stop multiple teammates from killing a heckler in the parking lot after games. Like, UNLV was where, like, the guys who failed out of the Last Chance University, they ended up at UNLV.
Wow. Well, the good thing is John Hamm now is a good guy. I assume. So a good portion of the Joey and Joan and Peggy storyline revolves around a vending machine. The boys are banging against the vending machine trying to get Joey's watch out, because apparently here's what happened. The vending machine keeps eating people's change, and I suppose they decided to try to stick someone's hand
Said Joey had the smallest hands.
Yeah, and Joey had the smallest hands. So in trying to get whatever they were trying to get out of there,
Harry Crane had a light bulb moment. He's like, ooh, small hands, huh?
Yeah, ooh, I bet you could grab my insides. he gets his watch stuck in there. And they have this insane scene where you see, like, Joan is, like, chiding them for being too loud. And then Joey is like, oh, sorry, Mom. she takes him aside to have a conversation about how, like, hey, maybe, you shouldn't be such an asshole. And this is what happens.
You're so arrogant.
Me? What do you do around here besides walking around like you're trying to get raped?
Excuse me?
I'm not some young girl off the bus. I don't need some madam from a Shanghai whorehouse to show me the ropes.
So that is, that's too far, is what I said.
Also, why would it be a Shanghai whorehouse?
I mean, she dresses...
It feels like he's mixing his metaphors there. I guess metaphor and simile is what he's mixing a little bit.
I also, maybe he's responding to the red. There's a lot of, she's wearing a lot of red.
Feels
Shanghainese to wear red.
Yeah. Mm. Joey would know the traditional lucky color of China. Yeah,
I assume he would. He's a very cultured guy.
You're walking around in China's traditional lucky color. We get it.
Yeah, we get it. All right, we understand. You know what year of what animal it is. Okay, Shunyan Kuaile, all that shit. Fuck you, whore.
What if there was an episode of Mad Men where they had to do an ad campaign for Shenyun? Oh, wouldn't that be great, guys?
So sick. I would love that.
Oh, we got to meet the Moonies again?
Yeah. God damn it. They're going to talk about how when, you know, they're going to talk about General Chiang Kai-shek.
We're going to have to unleash Chiang on this ad campaign.
Peggy later confronts Joey about this, and it's funny, the mom comment is something that you think is kind of like, I don't know, it just seems like a childish, you know, boy would say. But you find out that, oh, this really is a mom issue, and which I really enjoyed. That's here's that scene.
What did you do to Joan?
I told her off. Let me tell you something about the big ragu. We're creative. And she's an overblown secretary.
Fine, don't listen to me.
There's a Joan at every company. My mother was a Joan. Always telling everybody what to do. She even wore a pen around her neck so people would stare at her tits.
She's not your mother.
So, just so I'm clear, what he's saying there was that his own mother would tell people what to do and even wore a big pin around her neck so that everyone would look at his mother's tits? Is he talking about his mother's tits?
That's what I got from that, yeah.
Oh, you know, oh, classic mom. Always trying to get you to look at her big, beautiful jugs.
Yeah, it's insane to me.
I feel like this show is so good at being prescient about types of guys that would one day like come to sort of rule society. And like, I feel like this is a very good portrait of like the anti-woke backlash, where you can tell like so much of that comes from like someone who just like got yelled at by one too many like liberal teachers who were telling
you were humiliated by your third grade teacher. Yes. Yeah,
she was always asking us to read about Martin Luther King and telling me to stop jacking off.
Yeah. I hate her and now all women because of it.
But
it's really funny for him to just be like, you know, she's exactly like my mother, especially the part where with her massive fucking titties always hanging out there, making me horny for them.
These chicks with big, delicious honkers are all the same.
Yeah.
They're all the same. They're all my mother.
They're all my mom. All these asshole, big-titted women not dumping them out.
It made me think of Stefan Molyneux, that guy who was like, I was radicalized when my mother forced me to take my diarrhea medication.
Yeah, wait, I don't know that story.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Stefan Molyneux who talked about like the traumatic event of his life as being a child and his mom making him take his like anti-diarrhea medication.
What was traumatic about taking the medication?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
It had to go in his butt?
It might have been a suppository. I'm not sure. He was like on the very, very early wave of like
white nationalism. Yeah.
Yeah. White nationalism and anti-feminism. Yeah. Online.
I guess I know him mostly for his like shitty race science. So I was thinking, how do you get from my mom stuck a suppository up my ass to white nationalism?
Yeah. He's also so hot, you know, that's how you can get away with those kinds of opinions.
That's right.
The most sallow, bald Canadian who ever lived.
That's just like a classic libertarian thing, too, where it's like, everybody's always telling you what to do. Where to like, take your anti-diarrhea medicine? Like, you don't need a license to drive a car. Like, I don't need the government telling me like what kind of stuff I could put in my milk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That is what Joey is. In the scene after Joey is like, you know, hey, stop trying to get raped all the time. Joan is like shocked by what she's just heard. And Peggy comes in to her office, I think to use it as like a throughway, because like Joan has this weird office setup where people use her office as a shortcut. And in that moment, she tells Peggy, you know what? You could use the extra steps. Basically calls her fat right after. And I was like, I loved Peggy's reaction to it. It was like, okay, so clearly he said something really fucked up. So I'm just going to be like, okay, sorry, bye. Yeah,
hurt people.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And when she comes home to see Greg off, Greg, by the way, leaving for basic training, also is a rapist who raped Joan. So that comment hurt extra. So Greg tells her that she can just talk to her friends at work. It's okay. And then she breaks down crying because she realizes she hates work and everybody there. Later we see Dawn wanting to put Joey on another ad campaign and wanting him to be full-time for a couple of weeks. And Joan is now starting to tell people, actually, there have been a lot of complaints about him. And so maybe we should consider someone else when I think it's clear that the complaints are just her, right?
Yeah,
isn't that?
Yeah. He also, though, is not very good at his job either. That's like what struck me is so funny. It's like, yeah, I guess that's like the reality of like,
yes,
you have a budget and you're like, I guess we'll just put the mediocre freelancer on full time for a few weeks, even though like I'm jumping at it. But that moment when Don goes, perspective and narrative. Are you sure this was Joey?
That's
one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the show.
Yes. Yeah. No, he's not particularly good, but he's one of those guys who you can tell gets by on sort of mediocre talent and likability. Like, he's a guy's guy, like everyone in the office likes him. And also I think he gets by because there's always one powerful gay in the office who is trying to hit on him. And in this particular scenario, it's not even a gay guy, it's just Harry is not actually gay. He's only gay for Hollywood advancement. And yeah. So
he's like imagining himself. He's like, man, if I was handsome like Joey, think of all the things I could do.
Right, exactly. And instead, I keep having to buy Spanish fly. He has this great scene with Joey in which he's like basically just calling him hot the whole time. I loved it.
You're so handsome. I showed them a picture.
How'd you get a picture?
I sent one of those Polaroids from the Christmas party to Bernie Kowalski.
He's like straight up admitting to him that he's like, I stole pictures of you to send to casting agents because I was like, wow, look at this guy. And then that's when Peggy catches up to him and says, hey, maybe stop fucking with Joan so much. And it's funny because you see in that scene, he's like, okay, message received. He seems adult at that moment where he's like, okay, I understand. Maybe I'm like going too far. So you kind of, for a moment, think that maybe he's like, maybe he's not a piece of shit. Maybe it's just like, he just, you know, it's the 60s. Sometimes you say that to women, you know, and also I like it because it points out that, yeah, for sure, someone like Joey, or any man in the 60s who works in an office in New York, they all are like clueless about how insane they sound when they are talking about women. Like,
yeah, while Joey is being reamed out by Joan, Stan is pressing his bare ass up against the window of Joan's office.
Right. Yeah, they have like no gauge for seriousness as to like what they're saying or how seriously to take any woman at the office. And it's clear that Peggy occupies this very narrow, rare lane of being like a cool girl who can handle it, and that is not going to last. So Joey and the other creatives are trying to make Mountain Dew cocktails, and then Joan is talking to Lane about how the vending machine sucks, and Lane likes productivity, but Joan says it's just going to make all the secretaries fat. While they're in the office together, Joey draws a picture of Joan going down on Lane and posts it in Joan's office, which was like, it was one thing to like draw the picture. It was another thing entirely to then like put it in
post
her
it
office.
To her? Yeah.
Yeah. Like that.
That's not how funny pictures work, dude.
Right.
You're not supposed to like show the insulted person. You're supposed to snicker about it behind their back.
Right. It was like kind of the most insane part of it because I was just
like snitch tagged himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, you know, he's not admitting to it. And fucking Joan goes off on them in such a fucking beautiful way. This is probably my favorite scene.
I can't wait until next year when all of you are in Vietnam. You will be pining for the day when someone was trying to make your life easier. And when you're over there, and you're in the jungle, and they're shooting at you, remember you're not dying for me because I never liked you.
Jesus.
Damn, dog.
That's a pretty great little telling off scene, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved it. Yeah, and then, you know, after that, Peggy is, you know, shocked that, because Peggy's told him multiple times, like, hey, stop fucking with her. And also, please don't draw that picture. That's not nice. And then especially don't post it. Goes into Dawn's office and says, like, you know, we should, you know, do something about this. And Dawn is just straight up tells her, you can fire people, you know, like I don't need to be involved in this. Sounds like you hate this guy and sounds like he sucks. I don't care. You do it yourself. And I enjoyed that scene as well.
It's also the like good advice of like, look, you don't want me to get involved because then you're undermining yourself if you do that. Like,
right.
Just go deal with it. Like you have that authority. You're not my secretary anymore.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's something that I think Joan brings up, you know, coming from like another angle of that, which was like, okay, you know, you firing Joey now makes me look like a fucking asshole. Yeah, it was interesting because it's the office politics of who's a big shot, kind of like come out in that moment. But I like the way that Vince, why don't you talk for a little bit, you fucking asshole? I would love it if you talked.
Go ahead.
You think I want to talk the whole time? I got to fucking, you talk.
I got to go on water slides in an hour and a half. Yeah. You think I want to be wasting my energy talking about some show?
I don't care. I don't care about it. Vince, why don't you talk about the scene in which Peggy fires him?
I was wondering where you were going with that.
I wasn't going anywhere. I just talked till the show's over.
Yeah.
Do you edit the audio, Matt?
No, I do not edit the audio.
One of the most chilling things is when you put the audio into the timeline and you just see the long interrupted stretches in which you've been talking. It's really
humiliating. Every time I see it, I get mad at Vince.
What's great, because it's like you panic when you talk and you panic when you, at least for me, like I panic when I'm not talking, and I panic also when I'm talking for too long.
That's right.
There's no like, there's no perfect, there's no Goldilocks ratio there.
That's right. So you just got to keep going.
Yeah. So she fires his ass. She's like, I didn't know I could fire people. So she fires his ass and she thinks she's doing a solid for all womankind. And Joan's like, no, I hate you, you fat bitch. Go back to Brooklyn.
I got the scene where she fires him. I like that.
What if it were Dawn on his knees?
See, this is why I don't like working with women. You have no sense of humor.
You're fired.
All right. I see the nostrils are flared. I'll go apologize.
No. Get your things.
Are you serious?
I am.
We'll see what Dawn has to say about that.
Dawn doesn't even know who you are.
Damn.
Well, I was wrong about you.
It was great because she gave him like four chances to like stop being misogynistic, and like everything he said somehow made it worse. It's like, oh, well, I guess it's just another example of chicks being annoying.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see that you're mad. I see that you're on your period, so I guess I better back down.
He refused to apologize.
He had the experience of being on the freeway and seeing like, being like, oh, I'll get off to get gas at the next exit. I'll get off to get gas at the next exit. I'll get off to get gas at the next exit. Yeah. And then it's like next gas, 400 miles. Yeah, and you're like, right. Oh, God.
Well, all right. Maybe I should. Yeah. It's great because that's like the moment. It's funny. He pulls like a little bit of a Willie Loman, but like if a cool hot guy did it. Because
I don't know about cool.
Well, he's definitely cool. I think we can all agree with that. You heard the things he says to bitches. Because in Death of a Salesman, he's like, oh, I just maybe I could not work the road so much and just stay here and sell things here. And the guy's like, or I could fire you right now. And he's like, never mind. I'll go on the road. I like this moment where he's just like, all right, I could see you're mad. You fired me. So I'm going to go apologize. And not realizing that she is dead serious and is not going to be able to fucking wiggle his way out of it. So great.
Yeah, he's going to go have to sell his ass to Bernie Kowalski.
Death of a Salesman does end with the salesman dying in 9/11, right?
That's right.
Am I remembering that correctly?
That's right, yeah.
No, like, that's that Robert Pattinson movie I'm thinking of. Sorry.
No,
sorry
you
for
had
interrupting.
It right. It's Death of a Salesman. He goes, oh, Biff is going to be so, he's going to love me at my funeral after 9/11 happened.
I finally won that corner office on floor 63 of the World Trade Center. Everything's coming up, Willie. Oh no!
That's so great.
Oh no! Everybody in unison saying "Oh no!" right before the plane hits the towers.
The whole building.
Wow! The planes look so close from up here. Boy, these execs have it great.
Oh yeah. And, is that Brent Flyberg?
Yeah, hi. In honor of Joey, I drew a little picture of Matt and Vince. You can decide who's who.
Oh, man. I can't. Yeah. It blurs out sometimes. I'm going to have to look. I'm going to look at that picture very closely. But for now, everyone, stick around. Listen to these ads. Don't join the CIA. And we'll be right back. And we're back. It's Mad Yourself a Man here with Will Weldon. How you doing, Will?
Good.
You don't go well?
Yeah, is this part two? Are they listening to this separately?
Yeah, you know, it's like...
I know there is an ad break, but ad break. You're talking to me as if it's like the next week.
It does sound... I do realize I do that, but yeah. I like to think that people, when they're listening, you know, they like... temporally they're like, okay, just listen to 2 minutes of advertisement telling me to join the CIA. I come back to ask Will, hey, having just listened to 2 minutes of CIA ads, how are you doing with that?
Yeah, it's just fun. Like I don't know how much could have changed in my life, especially since we've all been sitting here
nothing
looking
can
at each
have,
other and talking.
Nothing can have changed. I think
your ancestors were surrounded by really like literal people, because they're like, oh, What does this guy do? Like other places, they would have been like, ah, we'll call him Smith. But for you, they were like, ah, He's, what's that guy doing? He's welding. That's Bob. He's always welding.
Yeah. That's, you know, so that's, yeah, that's what we do. In,
yeah,
between.
We got our last names very late in human civilization. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually, they changed it at Ellis Island. It was electric welder was originally what it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look
yeah.
at that.
Yeah, our family came into existence very late. We didn't have, we were all first names until like 1972 or something like that.
I love that.
But still came through Ellis Island for whatever reason.
So it was the scenic route.
Yeah. Big backlog.
No, it was I was on a princess cruise that crashed into the Statue of Liberty. So Don's storyline throughout, we see him really trying not to have a drink. Miss Blank
trying to figure out which babe he wants to screw, and it's surprisingly tough for him.
I mean, honestly, it must be hard to be that fuckable, especially since like he's also like not drinking now, or he's drinking less, so now his dick is like fucking fully working, and he's just like. Which one of you lucky ladies is going to get to nibble on it?
Which one he wants to go full mast? I forgot who Bethany Van Nuys was in between the time, like in between when Don tells Ida Blankenship to get Bethany Van Nuys on the phone and him going on the date. I forgot that that was her name.
Yeah.
And that sounds like such a great porn star name, like Bethany Van Nuys.
It's an unfortunate last name to have because of where the porn industry ended up mostly coming out of. It's like, hi, my name is Trixie San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
And I'm actually an accountant, weirdly enough.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Jessica Back of a Large Van.
Bethany Van Nuys getting plowed by Carl Encino.
Yeah. My name is Roxanne. We could do this forever, you guys.
Judy Bangbus. How are you?
Roxanne Brazzers. Anyways. Miss Blank.
Hello, my name is Trisha Feminist Porn Angle.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. My name is Donatella Stuck in Windowsill.
Stuck in Windowsill.
That's right.
I'm more familiar with it as a joke, as the dryer thing. I did stuck in windowsill sounds way more dangerous.
Windowsill stuck in all kinds of things.
Yeah, stuck looking for something under the bed. There's a lot of things you can get stuck in. Guys,
we should all just be castrated at birth, for God's sake.
This is bad timing, but I have to use the bathroom really bad.
Oh no!
You asked all of us.
I know. I'll be right.
He's gonna go get stuck in a toilet.
That's like less, I don't know that works as well, getting stuck in the toilet, assuming you're using it normally.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember seeing one, I think it was like Rocco Siffredi, where he's like plowing a chick and then pushing her head into the toilet, which I thought was like unnecessary.
That's like, I had a friend in college who would be like, look at this funny porno. And we'd all be like, you're probably watching too much porn if you're like, I've got my comedy porn as well. Yeah.
It's a different set of bookmarks.
Yeah. I've got my comedy porn, my action adventure porn. I've got the porn for jerking off too. That stuff I'm a little embarrassed about.
Mm-hmm. There's some that horrifies me. There's some that I want when I want to be scared, when I want to be horny, when I want to laugh.
Hey, for your next show, have you guys considered doing the MGM Plus series From?
From? Is that F-R-U-M?
F-R-O-M, yeah. Not oh, From. No. Not like David From. No.
I haven't even heard of this. What is it?
It's great. It's like people show up. They're just suddenly trapped in this spooky town, and there are like monsters in the woods that want to kill them, but they can only come inside if they're let inside. But they're not vampires. And you can't leave this town. Once you show up in this town, you can't leave this town.
Mm.
You're just like stuck there.
So it's like a Hotel California situation.
Yeah, except even more annoying. No, my wife started watching it for some reason, but it's good. Like,
really?
Everybody who's watched it likes it, but everybody who hasn't watched it and sees the ad, they're like, "Is this like a joke?" With
this, is just
From
so many
on
shows,
MGM Plus.
So many shows now that I just like. I don't know. I didn't even. I turn on the streaming box and I'm like, "What the fuck show were we watching?" And then I don't remember. End up watching something bad.
Look, I think From is great, you know, and you guys can have lots of From yourself a From, you know, you can have lots of fun with the title. And for sure, your listenership will go way up because that show is real popular.
Yeah. I feel like you never know what is going to hit online. And then like you realize that there's like a million people that are watching fucking Traitor. I've never seen Traitors, but like everything online is like Traitors, Traitors, Traitors. I still don't know what it is, but. But apparently people are watching it.
Yeah, come on. How do you don't know? You don't. It's fine if you haven't watched it. You don't know what it is.
Well, I know what it is sort of now. I know that Alan Cummings hosts it and it's some sort of reality show, right?
Yeah, it's just like Werewolf or Mafia, essentially.
Okay.
That's it's the like one. Everybody picks somebody. Everybody at the end, they all go, you're the traitor. And then they reveal if they were one of the traitors or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's not an obvious enough conceit for a reality show for me.
I mean, they zhuzh it up. You're also competing for money, and the people who win, split the money up, but it also is now they're all celebrity additions. So they want the money, but for you, you're just like, yeah, but I don't care about their fiscal situation. I'm just like rooting for whoever. And there are also weird alliances. Like, they'll be like, women from a Housewives franchise, they'll be like, Housewives don't vote out Housewives. And it's like, why are they making these arbitrary things? But like, they do, and they take them very seriously.
I guess about? Like, I've never watched Survivor either, so I don't understand the whole like alliance building thing either. I'm just like, I don't, what? Okay.
It was a sensation, Vince. You missed out.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard, Survivor was a big deal though.
It was, yeah.
It was a big deal.
That guy made he created the myth of Donald Trump, sort of.
That's crazy.
The EP, you mean? Burnett? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You guys could serve yourself a Viver. There you go. There's another one.
That's a good idea.
And now, unlike my my joking pitch of From, people will listen to podcasts about Survivor.
I know.
There's probably 10 of them already.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. But there wasn't of The Sopranos.
I do love your guys' approach of being like, we're going to cover shows way after.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's the best way to do it, in my opinion. Yeah.
People might rewatch them.
Yeah.
I remember after the first episode of Westworld, somebody posted a screen cap of all the Westworld recap podcasts.
Damn.
And it was after the pilot aired, there were like dozens of them already being posted.
I love that. Because they all had to keep watching that bullshit. that sucks. Okay. So Mrs. Blankenship has had cataract surgery. All right. She is holding 4 giant bottles of liquor because she knows that Dawn is going to drink them. I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I fucking love her.
This might be her best episode thus far. And there's been a lot of strong Ida Blankenship.
She is so episodes. Funny in this. I love this right here.
I'm out of cigarettes.
I got your liquor. I only have 2 hands.
I'm set.
And then you're not.
I just like, she's so cunty about it. She's right, you know, because she's like, look, I know who you are. You're an alcoholic. Well,
I like the other scene too, where Dawn's like, how was your surgery? And she's like, oh, it was a waking nightmare. And he's like, so you're good though, right? Yeah. Like immediately, like didn't
like, compute. Yes.
Didn't take that in at all. He was right. Just like, oh, okay, well, it's over now, right?
I feel like what he took from it was, no matter what I ask, she's going to complain as if she's being murdered. So yeah. I'm just going
to
be like.
What he took from it was, I want her to stop talking.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. And yeah, and like beyond that, in that same scene, he's like, she's like, oh, your wife called. It's like, she's not my wife anymore. And he's like, anyways, she called and you have a 2-year-old's birthday party. And it's like, yes, I need to get Gene a present. And it's like, is he or she going to be in the end? Like, yeah. She has no idea about his family. And it's so wonderful. But yeah, Don spends most of this episode narrating his stupid ass fucking journal. I do like that while he's drinking exactly one beer, he is he basically gets self-conscious and he goes like, "I'm writing how my day went like a girl." That was very funny. He's watching news about Vietnam on TV, which then gets him to start thinking about how his son Gene was conceived in a moment of desperation and born into a mess. And all I could think was, Don Draper is writing this as if those two things are connected. He's like, you know, Gene is very much like Vietnam. Yeah. In that he
Child is turning into a bit of a quagmire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This child makes me want to carpet bomb Cambodia. But yeah, it is. I love Don doing the narration in this episode because it's so overwritten. And it's you just get deep insight into what kind of person he wants to project to be to everyone else. And it's so funny. He's like talking about a list of things he wants to, you know, I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro and, or just go to Africa.
Dude, just in general. Or just go to anywhere in Africa. Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. Well, it's good to have specific goals.
Yeah,
like
yeah. That. Specific and broad. Those are all fun. And
I'd love to go to Egypt or perhaps South Africa. Yeah. I hear they're close to each other.
Yeah, you know, take a train from one to the other. Meanwhile, Betty and Henry are having their storyline going on simultaneously. For her, she is following Henry as he's taking a meeting with some politics guy, and it turns out that Don is at the same restaurant on a date with Mrs. Bethany Van Nuys, who is an extra in the opera.
I like that all the young chicks that Don likes have weird orthodonture issues.
Oh yeah, I hadn't noticed that.
Bethany's got the weird sort of mouth thing, and then there was the
Does she
Stephanie
have a weird mouth?
Not as weird as Stephanie did, but yeah.
Which one was Stephanie again?
The Anna's niece.
Anna. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, she had 60s teeth. I feel like Bethany, I haven't noticed her teeth at all.
No, I feel like those are weird 2000s.
Oh, those teeth, are 2000s teeth?
Yeah. I don't think they have that much, that many like braces and like those.
Megan
those
also has people. Teeth. Megan has a big gap, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she has she is like the unorthodontured, and it's kind of like her thing, and she makes it kind of hot.
Oh, okay. Okay. I got you.
In my opinion. But
I see what you're saying. You're saying Bethany has perfectly shaped teeth.
Yeah, I feel like there's I don't know.
Will,
like
certain, what do you think about teeth?
I'm just sort of mulling over the phrase that, yeah, she has a gap in her teeth and she makes it work. She makes it sexy. And yeah. It's kind of like, well, how?
Well, you know.
What's she specifically doing to the gap in her teeth? Like,
she's making me imagine things, Will.
Yeah, every time you look at her, she's like shoving like a dime through it or something. Yeah. Like, oh, maybe.
I can change in there.
I think if the advent of like bad veneers have taught us anything, it's that teeth that have a little bit of character are generally like more
We're all into weird teeth now.
Generally more attractive than like weirdly uniform ones. At least
yeah, at a certain point, you'd like a person to look like a person.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes.
I had braces, so I'm like, you know, I'm talking shit on myself a little bit here. But
it would be fun if...
But that's just normal. That's just straightening out your teeth. Like,
yeah.
Right.
And crooked teeth can cause, like, headaches and stuff. It's just, like, getting, like...
Your teeth shaved down and then have something added to it?
I feel bad. I've made jokes about it, but like, Freddie, what's his face on the Dodgers? It's like, his veneers are crazy.
Yeah. Freddie like, Freeman.
Matt Stafford.
Yeah. Freddie Freeman, Matt Stafford. They're like, it's you look and you're like, you're 37 years old. There's no way you haven't had like a cup of coffee or tea in your lifetime.
Right.
And which would result in your teeth not being so brilliantly white all
the
time.
They all look like the Basque. And yes. beyond that, you know what they all look like?
Somebody stop my dental surgeon.
They also look like, remember in like Something About Mary?
Yes.
Matt Dillon He overhears something. He thinks that she likes having, she likes men with capped teeth, and he gets comically capped, like veneers, yeah, essentially. Yeah. Now everyone has that unironically.
Yeah, they look like that now.
They all look like that. And everyone's like, no, but I like it. It's very weird. Anyways, Bethany is
anyways,
there.
I would say if you're insecure about any part of your appearance, you deserve to be, and absolutely, it should be more so. I think that's the lesson to take from
that. Is the lesson. That's right. If you're feeling weird about your teeth, good.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and if you try to fix them, we'll still make fun of you.
Yeah, no matter what, we hate you. You can get roasted forever. So she's asking him questions like, are you a Felix or an Oscar, which is like an Odd Couple reference. And then she's like, hey.
That's so funny. Because when she said that, in my head, I heard like, hey, are you a straight or are you clearly a homosexual? People just aren't saying it out loud.
Yeah. It feels like she's asking him the stock questions like that were on OkCupid, where, you know, when you like look through someone's profile or something. It's like, what? You're the one treating this like a first date.
Yeah. I mean, but also, I think it is coming from a place of her being like, I don't know how to get this guy to talk.
Yeah. What is your deal? Are you like, an ENFJ or an INTJ?
Right. Exactly.
S.
TMJ, you know?
Yeah. No, speaking of which, TMJ.
She sees Betty at the restaurant, and Betty is so hot that she is like, oh, I need to go down on Don. So finally, for the first time, he gets some, quote unquote. I would never put it that way, but he does.
You say he gets all up in them guts.
He gets all
right?
up in them yeah. guts. Yeah,
which would not be true.
No,
in
he
this
doesn't.
Case.
No. But he does.
She slams that bazooka.
It's a little bit of that gluck gluck action in the back of a taxi cab.
Getting sucked off in the back of a taxi is fucking even. Yes. Even by today's standards, it's like, that's crazy. And
it's
I would
rude.
Say, inappropriate, yes. Certainly.
Yeah, all I can think of is like the cab driver who's just like, guys, I'm a person.
We're here. Yeah. I've turned the meter off.
Yeah,
can you please?
Like, this is insane. So she gives...
I have to clean slobber and cum off of that seat now.
I got divorced when I was like 27, and mm-hmm. even at the peak of my post-divorce madness, yeah. I would have been like, hey, you can't suck me off in the back of this cab,
yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Like, this would not be acceptable.
This is a lift. Yeah.
I can rub it a little and get me excited about the sucking off I'm getting later, but this is extreme.
There are so many options that don't involve
yes.
And if you're going to start doing that, in my brain I'm going to be like, I have to come as fast as possible, and then it's going to take forever. Let's
yeah.
just not do this, okay?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, for me I couldn't. It's like, this is useless because there's no way I'm going to be able to come. And
yeah, it's bad enough. It's bad enough this happening. It's even worse that the driver's going to watch me fail to get an erection because I'm so self-conscious.
Yeah, because I'm
about
scared.
This happening in the back of a cab.
Yeah.
you're gonna lean up too fast and I'm gonna squirt globs on the back of this Somalian guy.
Yeah. Jesus.
Okay, all right. We were just having fun over
here. You know,
here.
why did we always have to go there? You know? That's Mr. Mancini doesn't talk for long stretches of time and then is like, what if you came on a Somalian guy? We're yeah. trying to do a podcast here. Unbelievable.
Uncouth. I'm like, I told you I was a Joey.
That's right. You are. I'm more of a... Oh, fuck. I don't remember anyone else
a
from
Chandler?
Friends. Chandler, thank you.
You don't remember anyone else from Friends?
I blinked
out. What the
hell? Guys, I'm really excited
Boy,
about going to Great
I was
Wolf
just talking
Lodge.
About...
I just want to go to Great Wolf Lodge. That's all I want to do. So she gives him a blowjob. Doesn't finish. I think he doesn't come because she says to be continued.
No,
he looks pretty happy
came.
When
was,
she gets
yeah.
out of the...
You
yeah.
can tell he came by his face.
He looks
really?
Like a little boy, the way he's like
thought,
smiles up against the window and
I
watches
he
her go.
I just happy to... So does that mean she swallows?
Yeah.
Good for her. So she leaves. And,
I'm the only decent man on this entire call is
one.
What I'm learning
That's
now.
Right. You're the only good guy. He's narrating, doing again. He's just like, you know, oh, I bet she thought of that line all night. Unlike me, who's really good at thinking of lines, here's the next one. I like to sleep like a starfish. I imagine I am guy who's on a parachute guy. And that's what I like, sleep alone good. Like, you know, he's very smart.
Actually, so, I like sleeping alone. Mm-hmm. I like sleeping in a small apartment very far from my family. It's that's great. Right.
Yeah, I'm actually super into loneliness.
When he cracks open that can of Dinty Moore,
yeah.
I gagged watching him dump that into a bowl. Oh my God, it was disgusting.
Cold canned stew. He didn't even warm it up. Oh my God.
And did we get to this scene where Betty's friend is like, what did she say about Don when she's like, my husband calls him the sad man?
Yeah. It's like, oh, that sad man.
Yeah.
But yeah,
we no, just that's, call him Dinty Moore.
That's coming up right now. So meanwhile, Betty and Henry are fighting because she, you know, spent the rest of the date in the bathroom and then was complaining about seeing Don. Don is still letting them live in the house that he paid for. And
men's rights, man.
Yeah.
Coming
so
out
first
here.
Of all, unbelievable. And
I gotta pay child support for some kid my wife won't even let me see.
Yeah, exactly. She won't even let me raise it. And
welcome to Mad Yourself a Man, a podcast about how we hate the family courts.
Mad Yourself a Men's Rights Activist. Henry wants to sever the relationship completely between her and Don, so calls him up and says, hey, I'm buying a boat, and I need you to move your shit out of the garage. And it's also a way to get him to not go to the Gene's second birthday party on Sunday.
It's also a way to mog him, where he's like, yeah actually, my life is going so well, I'm buying a boat. I might even start like a t-shirt business and open a restaurant.
Yeah.
Things are going pretty well for me over here. Yeah. So you got to come and clean your stuff out of my wife's garage.
Yes. And Bethany,
by the way, sorry, you skipped over the part where Henry and Betty are fighting in the car.
Yeah.
And you know, Henry's understandably like annoyed, I think, by Betty like being so bent out of shape by seeing her ex-husband, and she says, "I hate him." And he says, "You hate him? I hate Nazis."
Yeah, I know. like, hate's a strong word, Betty.
Yeah.
It's like, you're out here hating your ex. I'm out here hating Nazis. We are not the same.
I actually hate injustice and things of this exactly. nature.
Things I hate, evil.
I hate bad things happening to good people.
Yeah. Communism.
Sure.
Bad dogs. So Francine, who's Betty's friend, says, you know, why do you hate him so much? My husband describes him as that sad man. And Betty is like, oh, it's all an act, which is so funny. It's a really good, insight into the character, because she truly looks at Don and believes the performance. And that's always been Betty's problem with Don, is that like she takes him at face value. So
I also think
she has no ability to look at him and go like, no, he's a sad guy.
You know? I also think it's like a waspy thing, and it's sort of that like, it's sort of that elitist failure of empathy where it's like, oh, you know, they're only homeless because they like you, they like it. Like they're
right.
Like anytime something bad happens to people, it's like, they probably brought it on themselves. Yeah, you know?
Yes. And she has to kind of make a choice about like how much to invest in hating this guy. And I don't know what makes her change. But at some point, you know, at the very end, the last scene you see is Don does show up on the Sunday of Gene's second birthday party. And she, you know, lets him, you know, Henry's all mad. What is he doing here? And Betty is like, you know, whatever, just it's fine. And says, it turns to Henry and says, we have everything, which is, I mean, it's like, it's a great line because I think she means it in that moment. I just don't know what made her change her mind. Did you have any theories on that, Vince?
Maybe it was just Francine talking her out of it. And, you know, and she's like, well, I guess I could be, I could still be with the husband who like broke my arm a few weeks ago, like Francine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Instead, I'm divorced and I have this, you know, I have this new handsome politician husband who treats me pretty well, all things considered.
Right. Yeah. So she has a change of heart and, you know, maybe hates him a little bit less in that moment. Meanwhile, Dawn says goodbye, Bethany. Because we are never going to see her again. And hello, Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller is arguing with what's clearly like a boyfriend or whatever on the phone. And he, Dawn takes that moment to ask her out on a date. They go out on a date and finally they make out. And I just don't know what it is about this actress, but she's the most beautiful woman in the world. And sometimes, like, I don't like Stranger Things, but when she's on it, I'm like, more her, please. You know what I mean?
I thought she was overdoing the Italian a little bit in this episode. But
is she supposed to be Italian? I thought she was...
her name's like Carla Buono or something.
Her name is
like
Faye Miller. She's a Miller.
No, in real life.
Oh, well, yeah.
But in this episode, too, she's like... You know, she's got the New Yorkie accent, and she's talking about her dad's like mobbed up and
But I figured it was like, a Jew, like she was part of the Jewish mafia. You know,
I don't know.
Those are some tough Jews.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe. When I hear the last name Miller,
and
I think, what kind of ethnic white are you? I think probably Jewish, but who knows.
But when I look at her face and hear her voice, I think Italian, so I don't know.
Doesn't matter to me. Nothing matters to me. I just look at her and I go, she's beautiful.
nothing matters to me. My wife, my daughter, nothing. I don't care about any of it. I'm horrifically depressed at the moment.
Everything feels the same. There's a grayness to my life. Which is why I'm excited about going to the Great Wolf Lodge and going down, down, down.
Sounds like Matt's going to gun himself a mouth later if something isn't done.
And that's the episode. Favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about. Vince?
We talked about it, but Ida Blankenship not knowing the gender of Dawn's child just nailed me hard.
Super good.
Also, one thing that we didn't talk about is like at one point where Dawn like zones out, the group, they're in the main room or whatever, and they're talking about Ida Blankenship, and Kenny starts, my uncle was blind. And then he says, like, he had syphilis. And then, like, Dawn, like, zones out. And turns into the teacher from Charlie Brown. Yeah. That was, like, a great kicker for
it was great because you're going,
reverie.
Wait. Yeah, that was great. Will Weldon, a favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about that we desperately want to talk about?
Yeah, that same scene, as they're leaving, Dawn tells Peggy to send Ray Charles in, I believe is how he refers to it.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Ida Blankenship. And also, the part Vince was talking about, I also love, I don't know that it's ever been done before on the show, but they do the thing where you like rack in and pull out Dawn.
Yeah.
So it like zooms in on him and you zoom in on the foreground and the background drops away. And just watching that happen, it's like, oh, it's like in a horror movie, but the horror is just a man contemplating this glass of liquor in his hand.
Yeah, exactly. It's just him being like, 20 minutes till I get to have next drink.
Yeah, it's like in Get Out when he's being hypnotized, except the hypnotism is, just alcoholism.
I love it.
Him being like, how many seconds would a normal human wait in between sips?
You can see him doing that calculus.
How normal people drink this slow?
Yeah. What am I supposed to do in the meantime?
I don't know what to do with my hands.
If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, you know what? I'm giving it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
I agree with you, but I think it's more of a solid B+.
Oh, okay. All right. Shocker. And Will Weldon, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
So I just want to say, I find these kinds of bits annoying of just like, we always give it the same thing and we act like we don't. Oh. And that's why I would give this episode an A-, which of course would make it a B+.
What, guys? We're at B+. That's a reply all reference. And that is a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A+ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Will Weldon, thank you so much for coming on and talking about Mad Men with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Where can people find you and listen to you?
Well, I'll be performing at Bohemian Grove in a couple weeks. Hey, a reference to an hour and a half ago.
That's right. Remember?
I think it's all Old Man Weldon.
Oh, okay. So we'll have the link in the description.
If I'm
so
on
follow
it,
him on social media.
If I'm
media.
On it, it's Old Man Weldon.
Yes.
Oh, I hope not. Also my Venmo. But that's also not the username I use for any of my banking stuff. So don't even try.
That's right.
Yeah, and then I also have a podcast called I Hate Bill Maher,
and
which is
you
about how much I hate Bill Maher.
It's really good. You should listen to I Hate Bill Maher. The description will include links to both his social media and I Hate Bill Maher, a wonderful
Is that a pro or anti-Bill Maher podcast?
We well, kind of come out in the middle.
Yeah, you know? Okay, sure. Just like Bill Maher himself. Yeah. Will, thank you again for coming on.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken. 60s
guy. Patreon.com/rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Anything $8 and above will get you a shout out. That means you get yourself a prep school name, courtesy of Vince Mancini. And, you know, Vince, we have three this week, and two of them are names, and one of them is not. It's just I couldn't find a name. I could only find this handle. So we'll start with that.
Okay.
A patron who loves our show, whose only name is Soft Approval. Can you give
boy.
A prep school name to Soft Approval?
We call this guy or gal the Noodle. Soft the noodles are soft, you know?
Oh, okay.
I was thinking of things that are flaccid.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Soft like a noodle. That's good. That's good. I understand the thought process. I like a soft approval. It's nice to approve something, you know, lightly.
Mm-hmm.
Two more left. We have David Rossi.
Rossi. This guy's the Razzie. We call this guy the bomb because he's been honored.
Oh,
as
with
a Razzie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Oh, and the raspberry for world's worst R scene, like from Irreversible.
Maybe Raspberry is a better name. Let's call him Raspberry. I call them the bomb. I'm gonna change that and update it to Raspberry.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like it because it's a degree away. But whatever. We're updating Raspberry. Sure. And last but certainly not least, Griffin Nelson.
Hey, we're calling this guy the wrestler because he's giving you the full Nelson.
Yeah, that's like, you want to wrestle? Well, you need to get yourself a Griffin Nelson to wrestle. But I don't even know why I try to do stuff.
I should just keep doing it.
I should just let you do stuff.
No.
I'm always like, what if I also join in?
No, you got a yes and. It helps.
Oh, it's bad for me. Those are our shout outs for this week. If you want to pod yourself a shout out, get yourself a prep school name, go to patreon.com/frogcast, join the $8 tier or more. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Also, if you haven't heard your name in a while, you're like, what the fuck? Patreon.com. Nope, I mean, frogcast@gmail.com. Do it now. All right, everyone, thanks again so much for listening. Time to go to the Great Wolf Lodge. And until next time, I don't think about you.
I think men gonna be men. It's episode 8, yeah. Stripper is a summer man. Oh, so he narrates. He's got a drink less you guys. He's trying to drink less you guys. You guys, or he'll be dead. There is the this bitch. You just proved to him that he is right. I'm just a meaningless secretary. I think I'm gonna be mad. It's episode 8. Yeah. The girl that's driving all that is named Bethany.
excuse me. Sorry. So anyway,
definitely leave that in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brent, double that, please.
gain max. Perfect.